You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. And we are your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas with the Hot Texas Swing Band, our friend Alex Dormont.
Yes, they open and close the show every week for us.
Yeah. Do we have any big announcements to make?
No, we have two really great guests, so we have a lot to cover tonight.
That we do. We have Henry C. Park. He is the film editor at True West Magazine, among other things. He's also written the book, The Greatest Westerns Ever Made, and the folks that made them. And we have Jim Jones on tonight, a famous musician and author, and we're going to be talking about his book, Hunter's Moon, tonight.
Hunter's Moon. Oh,
it'll be a fun show.
In stereo. It's so good. So welcome, Henry. Where are you joining us from tonight?
I'm back in Brooklyn. Or should I say still in Brooklyn?
Still in.
Yes.
And Mr. Jones, where are you tonight?
I am at home in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, right by Albuquerque.
Not
too far away from
us. He's a neighbor. He could be right here if we could have figured out how to get three people on the camera. Well, welcome, gentlemen. We're so happy to have you with us tonight. Let's see. Henry is with us the first Thursday of every month. And we are so happy when he is able to actually be there month after month after month. And he always gives us his update on what's happening on Western film and TV and whatever else he'd like to cover. So, Henry,
take it away.
All righty. Well, now I've got, for a change, I've got a real scoop for you, which I'll get to in just a moment.
Oh, wow.
On Labor Day, I had a very interesting talk with William Shockley. You may not know his name, but you know his face. On Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, he was the long-haired, not-so-nice bartender.
Wow.
Well, remember him? He's been a very busy actor and also a busy producer and screenwriter. He's co-written several Westerns, and he's just directed his first feature, a Western called The Long Shadows, which opens in theaters in November. It's about a young man who's lived in an orphanage since he saw his parents murdered. He's unprepared for the world he's entering. And he goes to seek the men who are to blame under the tutelage of former outlaw Dermot Mulroney. I should say the character Dermot plays, who's been a strong Western presence ever since Young Guns. Now, this movie goes into fairly uncharted Western territory, and I don't want to spoil it for anyone. So I'm going to not say much more about the plot. But it's beautifully shot in old Tucson, really fine costume and art direction, and features the beautiful Jacqueline Bisset in her first Western.
Wow.
And here's the scoop I was talking about. Yeah. I'm sorry, where did I? Yes. Shockley was telling me that the Dr. Quinn cast is still very close. He had just had lunch with the leads, Ann Seymour and Joe Lando, the other day. And then he kind of blurted out that they were meeting to discuss a possible reboot of Dr. Quinn.
Gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Yeah.
That's right. Not only the three of them are on board, so is Dr. Quinn creator and producer Beth Sullivan. Shockley's written a pilot script, and Sullivan's giving him notes on it, because that's what they do. It would be great to have that show back. It was such a good family show and a great introduction to Westerns for kids. And as I always harp on, there's not a lot of good Western stuff for kids to bring them into the fold. So I was very excited to hear about this.
Mm-hmm. Also, well, that's good.
Also, October 9th through the 12th is the fabulous 35th annual Lone Pine Film Festival in Lone Pine, California. Okay. Hundreds of Westerns have been shot there around the otherworldly Alabama hills. And it's the only film festival in the world where you can watch Randolph Scott or Hopalong Cassidy or Audie Murphy on the big screen, then hop in your car and go right to the spot where they filmed it. It's kind of mind-blowing and so beautiful. The tours are spectacular. This year, the theme is real. That's with two E's, real. Real adventure in Lone Pine. So instead of just Westerns, non-Westerns that were shot there will be featured, including Flame of Araby, The Loves of Carmen, Star Trek Voyager, Lives of a Bengal Lancer. Mm-hmm. Festival begins with Rustler's Rhapsody and ends with Silverado. Guests include a terrific bunch of historians and filmmakers and stars and their descendants like Robert Carradine, Patrick Wayne, Darby Hinton, Diamond Farnsworth, Wyatt McCrae, Patrine Dave Mitchum. To find out more, go to lonepinefilmfestival.org. Now, The Current True West features my interview with a terrific writer you heard on this podcast not so long ago. Yes, thank you. I haven't gotten mine yet. Ann Hillerman, who has written her 10th Leghorn and She mystery novel, continuing her father's Hillerman series. Also, my big piece in this issue, and Bobby and Jim, I know you read this, is A Century of Disenrollment. I interviewed the director of the terrific documentary You're No Indian about how casino-owning tribes are kicking out members to increase their own incomes. And I reveal that the business of disenrollment really began at the turn of the 20th century with Congress's well-intentioned but disastrous Dawes Commission. It's really infuriating reading. Thank you. I also look at pretendians. I love that word. People in show business who have faked their native heritage for years, including Iron Eyes Cody, Sasheen Littlefeather, and Buffy St. Marie. The Current Henry's Western Roundup features my interview with Russian bodybuilder turned Western star Alexander Nevsky, my interview with Ruta Lee about working with Audie Murphy on Bullet for a Bad Man, and my new roundup coming in about a week includes my reviews of three new Audie Murphy Blu-ray releases from Kino Lorber, my review of Ron Howard's new film Eaten, as in Garden of, and a look at recent Westerns on the New York stage. And you can read about all this and so much more at henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Yeah, those are very interesting articles in the magazine, Henry. You did a lot of writing for this particular issue.
Yeah.
You know, I think you mentioned Elizabeth Warren, too. She was a Native American for a short period of time, wasn't she?
Yeah, very briefly when it was useful to her. It became a real mess because of course Indian tribes, they're their own governments, and the members of them do things sort of the way they want, so they judge very often your lineage based on who they, you know, what relatives they can identify, whereas Elizabeth Warren was going by having DNA tests and trying to find some blood that she could say was directly from some tribe. So she really rubbed them very much the wrong way with that.
So interesting.
And apologize. You know,
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, what I thought was most interesting in the, I call them pretend Indians, but how do you pronounce that word?
Pretendians.
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 But pretend Indians is just fine. You get the idea with it.
Well, I was thinking about it. You had that part, and one of the ones you mentioned was Sasheen Littlefeather. She was right. The one that was to accept the Academy Award for Marlon Brando for The Godfather. And then she gets up and refuses to accept the award, which maybe he didn't want to accept it either. And then talks about how the Indians were treated so badly by the film industry, and only to find out later she wasn't a Native at all.
That's right.
Yeah.
And shortly before she died, and before word came out that she was not an Indian, the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences held some big event to just apologize to her decades after the fact for just how terribly she was treated. And the nice thing is, if you go onto YouTube, you can see that whole thing, and you'll find when she starts her speech and refusing the award, there is some booing, definitely, but she gets actually much more cheering and applause than booing, because, you know, people were very generous and open-minded to her, I thought. So, yeah. But she really lived for years off of the, oh, poor me, people were so cruel to me, because that was, you know, most of those years, there was no YouTube, and you couldn't just sit and watch it and say, that's not how it happened. Oh, she also claimed that six security guards had to hold John Wayne back from rushing the stage, which was most interesting because no one else saw it, including the guards, apparently.
Goodness. Henry is always just full of really, really fun information, you see?
I'm still struggling with the fact that Buffy St. Marie is not a Native American. I'm crushed. I don't...
That's right. Well,
yeah, that's the one I heard of most recently. And of course, well, what she claimed, you know, just different terminology because she's from Canada, so they say First Nation. But yes, the government stripped her of certain awards that she'd been given.
Wow.
Because of that, which is the first that I had heard of it. But yeah, apparently, well, I go into it in some detail in the article. But, yeah, she was not able to satisfy anyone with, you know, with proof. Let's put it that way.
Well, Henry, thank you so much for getting us going on tonight's show. We are going to take a very short break. And when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Jim Jones, our author guest tonight. And first off, this is a spot by one of our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency, with the question, are you a writer? Maybe you'd like to increase your social media presence, refresh your website, or like we just did, launch a website or a great landing page. Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, are standing by to assist you. Here's exciting news about a new feature offered to writers. Why not take advantage of it? Like we did. When we come back, it's all about Jim Jones. Stay tuned. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. Special guest, Henry C. Park. And we're going to be talking with Jim Jones on his newest book, Hunter's Moon.
Oh, it's such a good book, Jim.
Welcome, Jim.
Good to be here. I figured out this is almost exactly the third anniversary of the first show that I was on. And it was right after you guys started doing this particular show. And so that was 3 years ago.
Yes. All right. I was looking at that too. Yes. Yeah. And of course, you'll be on next year and the year after. And as long as you still, you know, are producing something.
Good Lord willing, the creek don't rise, as they say.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, we are delighted to have you with us, along with Henry, of course. And I think, Jim, you have a little bio. Do you want to share
that? We have a bio. My goodness. Well, I'm going to have to salute you, Mr. Jones. Jim has won 3 Western Heritage Wrangler Awards, the 2019 International Western Music Association Song of the Year, Western Writers of America, 2013, 17, and 21 Spur Awards for Best Western Song, and recently won a Will Rogers Medallion Award for Cowboy Songwriting for the song Cowboy Heart, which he co-wrote with Deanna McCall. He was a Western Music Association's 2014 Male Performer of the Year and is part of the trio The Cowboy Way, which has received the Western Music Association Group of the Year Award 6 times. His Western novels include the Jared Delaney series, the Tommy Stallings series, and the Bolo of the Brave children's book. He lives in Rio Rancho, New Mexico.
Yeah.
Welcome, Jim.
So, Jim, in honor of your music background, our Jim here is wearing one of his favorite shirts.
Just a guitar shirt,
the
right?
Oh, guitar Jim, yeah. Shirt. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I love that shirt.
We have to dress for the occasion.
Yeah, we try to match up with the theme of the show.
Well, you guys are sharp dressers, no doubt about it.
We did ask one question. Was there anything in the bio that you wanted to mention that I missed?
Some fun little thing that we didn't mention.
Well, I'm not sure what you're referring to in my bio. I mean, if I didn't know me, I would be impressed, but I do know me, so.
Well, something outside the bio, we know you enjoy fishing.
I do enjoy fishing. Yeah, I try to plan my performances around the West based on what the fly fishing situation is. So definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. That's a fun thing that the audience wouldn't necessarily know.
That's true.
Yeah. And also I know that there's a favorite sort of alcoholic beverage. I think you enjoy you and Ollie Reed.
We shared an affinity for Irish whiskey, particularly Jameson Irish whiskey. And we shared a lot of Irish whiskey, in fact, not just an affinity, but we shared a good number of glasses of Irish whiskey.
Yeah,
we miss Ollie dear too much. Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Miss Ollie. Well, let's see. Lately, Jim, you've kind of been branding yourself as a storyteller. We kind of think of ourselves that way, too. How is it that came about for you?
Well, the short version is it sounded so much better than a guy who can't figure out what he wants to do. So he just dabbles in a lot of different things. But it all kind of evolved from I've been a songwriter for many, many years. And I had the song Rustler's Moon, which is this one, the first book in my series. And it was a song, and at some point, I actually was driving home from Colorado to New Mexico and looking at northern New Mexico and the scenery up there, and I thought, what a great setting. And I thought, you know, there's so much more to that story that could be written, and I've never written a book. How hard could it be? Which is one of the dumber things I've ever said out loud, because it's incredibly hard. But I got the bug, and so I started doing those books, and then I ended up because for years I was a professional psychotherapist with children and families. And so I have an interest in helping kids. And so that led to a children's book. And then more recently I've done the same thing of how hard could it be? And so I've working on a Western documentary and a Western pilot for perhaps a streaming series. If anybody with more money than good sense is listening tonight, give me a call.
Yeah. Your music has taken you across the country and to some interesting stages. One of the years that you accepted the Wrangler Award and you performed, who was in the audience?
Well, the good thing about who was in the audience is I didn't know where they were seated, which was right down in front of me, but it was a great big stage and the great big screen behind me. It was like I was George Strait, only a lot older, but I didn't think about it, but I'm sitting there, I'm up on the stage singing, and right down below me is Taylor Sheridan, Kurt Russell, and Deanna asked me, was I nervous? And I said, well, no, I'm a professional. And she said, well, those guys were right there. And I said, ooh, I didn't know that. If I had known that, I'd been nervous. So sometimes ignorance really is bliss.
Oh, great. You have a question, I know.
Well, first of all, Henry, do you have any comments?
Well, I would just want to throw in, Jim, when you were saying that you were looking for somebody with more money than sense to throw in with you, the last time that I did an interview where somebody said that, and I included it in the interview, that was Kevin Costner. Oh. And that was before he got Horizon together. So I'm a great person to be in the crowd when you said that question.
There you go.
That is a good right.
guarantee, but it worked once.
I knew this would be a great pairing tonight. Yeah, exactly. I knew this would be a great pairing tonight. Jim, you belong to a number of writing groups. Have you found some, what have been some of the benefits that you have found belonging to writing groups and music groups?
Really across the board with the different professional groups I belong to, and I belong to music songwriting groups, and I belong to the Western Music Association for a long time. And also the Western Writers of America, and that's Western literature. You know, the two things about it are that when you go to these events or these conferences, you just meet a lot of people, and you never know. If you go with an agenda, you really miss the boat, because so many of the things that have happened to me have been things I wasn't planning on. But I meet people and you get to talking and you find out somebody's interested in the same thing or whatever. And so, I mean, I've gotten publishing deals. I've got, you know, both my literary agent and my publicist, which is Blue Cottage Group that you had a wonderful commercial for, met them there. And so there's lots of opportunities that come out of those kinds of experiences. Not to mention in writing specific writing groups where you get the feedback from other writers that's so critical and growing. But the best part really is making friends, lifelong friends. I mean, I have a whole stable of friends that would do anything for me and I would do anything for them that I've met through these groups. And it's like you find your tribe. I guess that's it. I could have just said that.
You find your tribe. Well, and I know that some authors have shared with me that they can also be great, sort of the go-to person when you're writing about something you don't know a lot about, or you want to run some specifics, you know, by someone that does know,
right,
and that you have that wonderful network. I think Jane Little Bodkin just worked with you, I think, on a little bit of editing.
Oh my God.
And we've met her through Western Writers, and she's been a guest here, and is just such a terrific writer. But that was so interesting that she also, you know, threw in with you to edit the book we're going to talk about.
Oh, I know. She was wonderful. She went way above and beyond the call of duty. I just talked with someone that I met through Western Writers to find out information about getting some props for a thing that we're going to be working on. That were authentic, you know, because you don't want to have like a, you know, a 1975 Six Hour in an 1882 movie. I mean, so it's wonderful. You just have all these resources at your beck and call.
Yeah. We're going to step away for another break. And then when we come back, we're going in depth into Hunter's Moon with our featured guests, Jim Jones and Henry Park. So stay right where you are, and we will be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking about Henry C. Park from True West Magazine and Jim Jones on his latest book, Hunter's Moon, which we have right in front of us. I want to ask a question, a backup question, sort of. Jim, we've been talking about your music career. We've been talking about you going out and performing. We've been talking about your writing. Just when do you do all this?
He's going to do a time management seminar next year at WWA, right, on how to manage your time.
Well, you know, when you reveal what's behind the curtain, it sort of takes all the mystery out of it. And the biggest mystery is I have no idea. I couldn't tell you how I do it. I just do it, and then it's there and it's done. So I don't know. That's my workshop right there.
Okay. That's what we need to do.
That's true.
We just got the secret because we can't figure it out. You know, we just don't go to bed. I mean, that's how we do.
I know. You sleep about 2 hours every couple of days.
Yeah, maybe.
We may not be as organized. You know that?
I think not. Well, Jim, you just received a glowing review from Midwest Book Review, which is so prestigious. And I'm just going to read a couple of sentences of it as we begin to the conversation about this great book. And this is what Midwest Book Review has to say. Hunter's Moon heartily embraces all the facets that make for a superior Western story. Emotionally compelling characters, discussions of motives and approaches to life, and historical and political relevations that are nicely embedded in the atmosphere of the 1800s. And then it goes on and on and on, and it is spot on. Congratulations, Jim.
Yeah, I was real pleasant surprise. I didn't know what to expect. And I felt like, you know, the modern version of what's her name? They really like me. Yeah.
But so, all right. Well, do you want to?
I was going to say Hunter's Moon is the. I think it's going to be the last in the series here.
Yeah, it's the final book, and it's the fifth book and final book because, as I was writing it, it became clear to me that the story is kind of run its course, and it's a good place to move on to something different. I think, you know, the danger is how many times you beat the dead horse, and you know, I don't want to do that. So it felt like this whole saga is at a good stopping place. So yes, it's the last one.
And it answers for the reader a lot of questions that they might have had as the previous book number 4, Halo Moon, came to its riveting conclusion. So this cover is just beautiful, and I'm just going to hold it up to the camera again. Jimmy, you want to tell us, is there any little backstory to how this cover came about?
Well, the whole story is that my publisher is Speaking Volumes Press, and they've been wonderful to work with. They're a small independent publisher, and boy, their art department is magnificent. And so each of my Moon books has had a specific, like Rustler's Moon is a specific phase of the Moon and throughout the whole thing. And so they've done a great job with that. And so when they sent me this, and I'm the world's worst artist, if I had to do my own covers, it would be a total disaster. So they sent this to me and I thought, oh my gosh, that's perfect. I mean, it's like a kind of a mysterious, spooky look, and they made the moon so big. The Hunter's Moon is the full moon that immediately follows the harvest moon as the weather is changing and it's getting cold. And traditionally, that's when the Algonquin tribe came up with that term. In fact, that was a stage that they paid attention to, and that's when they would stock up on their food for the winter and everything. And it just captured that whole thing. It's also spiritually, it's kind of a time to hunt and to fight, to stand and fight if you need to, and to survive. And so that fit the theme.
Well, and we discovered as readers that there's a variety of hunting things going on, events going on, as people are following other people, and we're out on the trail following and wondering, is there going to be, you know, a victim that's going to get caught or get away, or what's going to happen, right?
Yeah, it's kind of, the storyline is a little bit of revenge, but it's also really about bringing bad guys to justice.
Yeah. Well, and that was a switch from in Halo Moon. That's what kind of got the main character, Jared Delaney, bogged down. Is he lost sight of kind of right and wrong and justice, and just got mired in a desperate need for vengeance, and at great cost to some family and friends. And so this is kind of the redemption part of the story.
You're bringing some gang activity. It's hard to believe, I think, for people that don't know much about Santa Fe, except that it's an art capital of the country, but they have something called the Santa Fe Ring. And we've had bad guys in organized crime for a long time there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that part, I mean, I tried to set a context that was historically accurate in terms of the corrupt politicians in Santa Fe and what they were doing. And thank goodness we don't have corrupt politicians anymore, but we sure did back then. And and the other, there's another gang, another gang involved, the really bad guy in Halo Moon who meets his comeuppance, was based on a real character in Las Vegas, New Mexico, who was the head of a gang called the White Caps gang. And, so a lot of that story and this story have to do with what's left over, the remnants of the White Caps gang too. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see.
Frank, did you want to jump in?
Yeah. Henry.
Yeah. Jim, I was wondering, when you are writing, say, a book 4 or book 5 of a continuing saga like this, how do you approach it in terms of, well, you've got to know that some people that are going to pick it up, it's going to be the first book of the series that they read.
Right.
And so you can't count on them to come in knowing what's happened in the first 4 books. And yet you can't rehash 4 books worth of stuff to begin the 5th one. How do you deal with that?
Well, it's a fine line, I think. I think you have to, I mean, you have to rehash a little bit to kind of get people up to speed. But you can't rehash too much or you're stuck in the previous story. And, I always find that no matter how much or how little I do it, it's either too much or too little for somebody and they miss something. So I think I have to do the best I can to lay it out for people so they know who's who and kind of what's happened in the more immediate past. But and the other thing is that you don't have to do it all in the first chapter. You know, you can sprinkle it in. I had a wonderful editor with a previous publisher, a lady named Hazel Rumsey, and she helped me with that. She's like, you don't have to just dump it all in the first chapter. You can, you know, throughout the course of the book, you can put in little bits of information here and there that kind of help people understand the background and everything. So. But it's tricky. Right. I mean, it is.
Yeah. I think you did it very effectively because I was coming in on book 5, with no familiarity of any of it. And, you just sort of laid it in casually so you could pick up without having to stop the story dead at all. I thought it was very well done.
Thank Good you. Job. I appreciate that.
You
yeah.
bet.
Yeah, and as readers, and it had been a while since we'd read book 4, and it made me want to go back and remember some of the details in book 4. But yes, you weave it in so well, and some of it is the character might be on horseback and is riding somewhere, and the mind goes back through memories, or there's. So
it's true. It's
which
a good
is
way
what
of doing
we
it.
All
yeah.
do. You know, that's yeah. just the kind of normal thing. And so it always just felt like, okay, he's providing some information, but it also feels very natural that a character would be rethinking. We get to share because we're in the character's mind. And
And we also saw in growth in some of these characters. They kind of. Yeah. They kind of develop even more so as we go along. I think that's a little challenging to take the characters along and keep them within the scope of the character you created to start with.
But they kind of have to grow too, don't they, Jim, from book to book? And at least the adult, well, they all kind of have to grow. Is it not? Does that as a writer also keep you interested in what you're writing? Is how you're going to grow them?
Sure. And again, my wonderful editor, Hazel Rumney, was the one who helped me with that, about having characters grow from the beginning of a book to the end of the book and from one book to the next book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, this takes place over a 4 or 5 year period, I think. I can't remember who wrote this. I don't know, but I think it's 4 or 5 years. You would expect people to mature and change based on their life experiences, and they do. And, you know, the funny thing is some of that has to do with just, you know, we all know people. We know people who we've known for a long time. We've seen them evolve, and that's how I wanted my characters to evolve, which is kind of naturally the way real people do, not some caricature hero or something like that, but that just we all change and hopefully get better as we grow. So it's tricky, but it's not that tricky because you look around and you think of who you know, and then you can kind of model it on that.
Yeah. No, you have a question.
We're kind of talking about some characters, you know.
Characters, yeah.
You know, you write some really nasty guys.
Oh.
Do you have fun with that?
Oh. You guys have said that to me before, and I get the sense that you're a little creeped out by it. a bunch of the bad guys in my stories literally are based on people, real people in history who did those horrific things, a number of which I would have never thought of. I would have thought anybody could do something the way they did it. And so, you know, I borrow liberally from that, you know, the history. The rest of it, because I knew you were going to talk to me about that, and I wanted to come up with something that didn't make me sound real creepy. And that it's the, you know, the thing is, there are things I see people, not just in historical context, but also people in real life, who I think do abominable things, and have no regard for other humans. And I think, you know, you mentioned in the Midwest Review. They mentioned something about political, and I just wanted to clarify this. There's nothing partisan about this. I mean, the politics were the politics at the time, but the main thing I focused on throughout the series is how powerful people oftentimes have no regard for other people who don't have the same power, and they right. just want to get more and more, and they don't mind running over people. And that's something that just continues throughout our society and has been here for as long as we've been around. And we all have to find ways to deal with that. And some of those people are really mean, nasty people, and they just are.
And yeah.
I just try to weave some of those different characteristics in along with, you know, the historical context when that applies. So,
yeah. Yeah, he does write creepy scenes. However, and gentle readers, however, he knows how to turn off the light and let you decide you're not going to imagine, or you are going to imagine. He gives you enough. He gives you enough. What filmmaker does that, Henry? Is it Hitchcock? There's, you know, someone who's kind of sets it and then fades away, and you're left with, oh my gosh, I can't believe it.
Hitchcock certainly did that. I always think with that sort of thing with John Carpenter in the original Halloween, yeah, when they go into the house where they know the psycho guy has been, and they look at this thing on the floor, and the cop says, "What's that?" And Donald Pleasance says, "It used to be a dog." And it just horrifies people. Yeah. And I talked to people who describe in great detail what they saw. They never showed anything. They just showed the faces of the two actors. Mm. But you, as the reader or the viewer of the movie, create something much more depraved than the writer yeah. could for it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Jim, you have that skill. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
I guess that's good, right?
Yeah. And you write really wonderful women also.
That's because I know a lot of really wonderful women, and I observe them, and I also ask for their feedback, and they also slap me around every so often when I need it. And so I understand strong women, and I know that the women, there are many women in the West that have been misportrayed in Westerns as damsels in distress. they were the ones getting you out of the mess a lot of the time. And that's still the case. And so, yeah, I like to have the female characters reflect that kind of strength.
Yeah. The main Jared and Eleanor Delaney are the main characters that meet in book one, and we go through their lives together. And I know I called you the other day right after we'd finished the book, and I said, thank you for setting Eleanor up to do what she does. So readers, you need to read to find out what is it that Eleanor Delaney does.
She's tough. Well, you don't want her to be your friend, not your enemy.
She goes through a transformation, so it's quite interesting. You know, it depends on how you look at the character, because I look at the characters the way I see them through my eyes, and some I like, some I don't, depending on what I'm reading. And I had a lot of difficulty with Eleanor for a while until I saw that. Well, okay, she's taking a different look at this.
Go, Eleanor.
Yep.
Jim, how do you know when it's time to tick someone off the page?
By that, you mean kill them off?
Well, however, they're no longer in the story. Disappear. Usually, I think you kill them off, but
yeah. That with the bad guys. Killing them off is not a problem. It's how do you, or because we didn't kill them all. I mean, me and the other guys didn't kill them all. And, you know, so how they get their comeuppance and all the ramifications that and fallout from that, that does take a lot of thought about what makes sense, what, you know, what's going to satisfy a reader who's had enough and they're ready to see this person get their just rewards. But generally speaking, it's the only challenge is how do you do it? The hard one for me is that over the course of the series, there's been people who were the main characters who got killed. And yeah. I made a decision early on that that's part of what happens. That's part of what happened in the Old West. That's part of what happened in times that are violent. Sometimes really good people get killed. Or die, you know, whatever, for whatever reason. And I felt like I needed to, in order to stay true to a realistic story, I needed to include that. And so.
Well, and it always, as a reader, I can recall on other books that suddenly going, what? And having to go back and Jim, how could you do that?
I have had people get really mad at me because I got killed off one of their favorite characters. I'm like, it's a book.
Yeah. But I think sometimes that kind of thing is that's good for the story. That's what it's all about. You can't write a book that's going to make everybody happy, you know, to speak. You write a book that everybody can enjoy, but.
Yeah. Henry, do you have any other questions for Jim before we go on to our last little ad spot?
Sure. Yes. I was curious if having just done this 5-book saga, if you're working on a new book and if it's going to be a standalone or the start of a new series.
In terms of new books, I'm still kind of trying to decide what direction I want to go with that. I don't know whether I want to write more children's books and focus more on that for now. Nobody dies in those things, so that's good. But actually, my agent has Terry Weiner has suggested that I write a mystery about a musician that ends up kind of becoming part of a big murder plot conspiracy thing unwittingly, and it's kind of clueless. And it bothered me that she thought I was perfect to write about a clueless musician, but. So I'm thinking about that. I'm also doing some other stuff too with storytelling in a different way.
We're going to take a break and show you a little bit about another one of our sponsors, which is OutWestShop.com, which is a business that we have. And so take a listen to this. And when we come back, we're going to find out what these gentlemen are doing next. Don't go away.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to My Room with a Writer. Jim, we were just talking here during the break. Continuing on, what's next?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I'm working with a wonderful screenwriter by the name of Elizabeth Shrum, who has written a wonderful script based on my book, Rustler's Moon. And she's taken all the best parts of it in the dialogue, but she's added a bunch of things. And now we're at the point where we're getting ready to film a trailer next month, like about a 3-minute teaser to get some interest from people. We do have the wonderful R.W. Hampton, who's a International Western Music Association Hall of Fame member and also an actor who's been a lot of different stuff. And he is going to be in the trailer, and hopefully, if we get the pilot done, he'll continue in the role. So I'm working on that, which it's like writing a book the first time. It's like seemed like a good idea. I don't know what most of the time I'm like, what's that? What are you talking about? I know what B-roll is now, though. That's good.
And Jim, where can people find you and follow you and get your books?
They can find me and follow me first at my website, which is www.jimjoneswestern.com, and also on Facebook at Jim Jones Music and Books.
All right. And Henry, what are you working on and where can people find you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'll soon be heading to Medora, North Dakota. Home of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library, to celebrate the premiere of season 2 of INSP's Elkhorn, the series about Teddy Roosevelt's younger years. And people can always find me at Henry's Western Roundup.blogspot.com and, you know, on Facebook. And I keep writing articles for the INSP channel. And I haven't checked out to see if the change has gone into the blog yet, but I understand I'm going to have my own writer's page with a little picture of me and links to
done. So, wow, that's exciting. Congratulations. Let's see, Jim, you have a quote.
We saw a couple episodes of that series you're talking about.
Yes.
Okay, one of our characters, our head character, our number one guy, protagonist, Gerald Delaney, he's got to rescue his friend Davey from the really bad guy, Jesus Abreu. And he has to put a plan together. And he thinks, okay, this plan, it could work, he thought. Everything will have to fall into place quickly, but it might just work. I just need a little bit of luck. And then he thought again, all right, I need a lot of luck. There you have it.
This has been so much fun having both of you with us tonight. Thank you so much for giving us your time and the gift of your talent. This is episode number 151. It will replay if you're watching on Facebook immediately after this live airing, and then it will also be later tonight up on audio on Podbean, on our Podbean page. And then in the next 12 to 24 hours, you'll find the audio on Spotify and Amazon Music and TuneIn and all those kind of places. You can also go to our website, thanks to Janelle Madison of Clicks by Madison, rendezvouswithawriter.com. And from there, there's all kinds of places that you can go to click to see and listen and find out who's coming up next and all. So it's sort of the one shop place to go. And we want to thank Sam Hassan of LA Talk Radio that keeps us on the air and things running smoothly. Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band for opening and closing the show every week. And next week, returning guest Candace Simar is with us. And the book we're going to be talking about is Montana Matrimonial News. And this book is not going to be released until October 7th. So this is kind of a mock-up of the very very handsome cover. And we are looking forward to having Candace with us back again. And I don't know, is there anything else we need to say?
Thanks for being on tonight, guys. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And fun show.
Fun show.
And as we always say, out west is a great day out. That's it. A great day out west. I'll get it right.
And we'll see you down the trail. Yeah.